821. And in the studio with me now, a member of the Snyderville Planning Commission, Colin DeFord. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning. So we had a glowing topic last night and a hot topic.
Well, let's start with the ski lift.
That'd be the glowing one.
Yeah. What do you think of the visual impact?
You know, when they came to us a year ago, we said no glare, and it's apparently glaring in the morning, so we need to get it fixed.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it fair to judge that chairlift, though, just by the visual impact on Kearns Boulevard during a certain time of day, the morning?
I think so. I mean, those are the conditions we put on it when it originally came through, so I think that that's what we need to look at when it came back.
So, repaint it? I mean, how do you reduce the glare?
I don't know. I mean, we directed them to, you know, come back to us with a plan B. Can you paint galvanized? They've already tried to dull it with an acid wash. So what's the next step? You know, come back with your engineers and let us know what the next test that you've done and show us how it won't. It's a metal object up there, so I'd imagine they could paint it. They paint the galvanized poles that are ski lifts, so.
So if they can't do that, they have to pull it out?
I don't know. Some of the commissioners were leaning towards that. I don't know the legality of that, but that was definitely mentioned last night.
All right. Regarding the wood-burning stoves, personally, you want to be more restrictive as well?
Yes, I would like to be, but I would also, I suggested last night that in this work session that we make it very restrictive. So then the document's out there in a very restrictive nature, and then when it comes back to us in a public hearing, then we get the public comment for people who maybe are disenfranchised by doing this. I want to hear from those people, because we don't know. I don't know by banning all of this who we might be disenfranchising, and I want to hear from you. So if we put all this language in now and you see it in a working document and you come back to us for public hearing, I want to hear from you why this is hurting you to burn.
So does the Planning Commission want to look at what's allowed for outside burning as well?
That was part of this, yeah. So basically, this document right now is written would not allow you to burn trash, garbage, anything like that in the basin, except for some limited construction waste that I believe I gleaned out of this meeting last night.
Yeah. So what would be allowed? I mean, what about those chimeneas, those fire pits?
Those are allowed. Mm-hmm. Barbecues, chimeneas, those aren't restricted. Mm-hmm. We won't be taking anybody's barbecues away.
Burning, well, maybe we should, though. Those that just kind of let it.
Don't attach me to that.
What about farmers doing controlled burning?
That's fine. We haven't restricted that. I mean, we certainly don't want to take that right away.
Yeah, I think the health department pointed out that if you do restrict outdoor burning too much, that you're going to end up with illegal dumping.
That's right. And the concern came, the health department told us that the concern is winter burning and that there's not much evidence that there's a summer inversion problem up here. So they're really trying to target the winter.
All right. So the county has to come up with a permanent ordinance by mid-August when this temporary one goes away. Phil Bondurant and Rich Bulla said that this is just one step. You were worried that the next step may not happen for several years.
Well, I've been on this commission now for 4 years, and I see how slow government moves. And so I'm always a fan of let's throw it all in now, because I'm not sure when we're going to see it next. But Phil and Rich, they assured me that, you know, when there's momentum on something, it comes back. So I trust them.
All right. Do we need to do an inventory of how many fireplaces we have?
I think so, because then we could possibly move towards a system, which I really like the idea. I think Telluride's using it right now. So if you say you're a large residence that's coming in, you want that mountain experience with your fireplace and your logs in there, then there might be an avenue where you could buy a permit, but then you'd have to buy possibly two people's fireplaces out for them. So like if you have a wood-burning fireplace now and you'd like to go to an efficient wood-burning fireplace, then to get a new fireplace built, then you would then buy that person's fireplace out and then pay to replace that with two people's. So new fireplace would take out two. I like that idea, but that's really not proposed yet.
Yeah. So are we just talking about fireplaces? Because aren't there some EPA-approved wood-burning stoves out there?
Yeah, that's in here. So if you if you buy an EPA wood-burning stove, you can install it. That doesn't restrict that.
Yeah. I was surprised to hear the numbers. An older fireplace or stove putting out as much pollution as 5 dirty diesel buses. I mean, what are we talking about? One fireplace generating as much particulate pollution as 90 SUVs? Is that in a year? Or is that what we're talking about? I mean, what's the one night?
Well, so I encourage everybody to go and look at the staff report because this is all in the notes. It's really shocking to see the evidence of how dirty your fireplace is. It really was eye-opening to me. I didn't realize. So I think part of this is probably education.
Okay, so we don't know what those numbers refer to. It's per year?
Don't know. But okay. It's in the document. I didn't get to dig down into it deep.
Okay. One final topic was the application for a Verizon cell tower, 80 to 90 feet tall, located west of the Walmart near the Chevron oil tank. The interesting thing here is that the applicant proposing to do the tower as a bare pole or disguised to look like a tree. It's called a monopine. Did the Snyderville Planning Commission like either one of the options?
Well, so yes and no. So I suggested to Verizon that they first take a look at other options. They could do macro and micro sites where they basically put antennas on tops of rooftops and buildings that you don't see. There's actually some in the Kimball Junction. So if you look at the building that's next to Taco Bell, there's actually the Vonza's is in it. So there's actually an antenna on the side of that building. I think AT&T owns it. That supplies support to the Kimball Junction area, and I would like Verizon to look into doing that micro sites before they stick up a giant tower. So we asked them to come back with their engineers to tell us why that would or wouldn't work, and the engineer that was there was amicable to it and thought that it's not as efficient as a monopole or putting up a tower, which I do understand because they have a good site. So if they have to come back with a pole, then we agree that just a generic cell tower was probably better than the tree because to me, and I think everybody agrees, when you see a fake tree, you see a fake tree. And nowadays, the poles tend to just seem to blend in with the surroundings.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope. Thanks for having me.
KPCW News Time, 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Park City Council meeting and work session tomorrow starting at 3:45. In the studio with me, I have Park City Manager Diane Foster as well as Special Events Manager Denny Dearsay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Diane, let's start with you, the manager's report. First, the Cheryl's coming on board, Prospector and Sidewinder Avenues in June and then later on Park Avenue. I guess some concern that why are we going to Cheryl's when we don't even have a comprehensive bike lane striping program? I mean, if you look at the striping on Bonanza Drive, you don't see a lot of the striping.
It's actually part of the walkability efforts that the city's been doing. And this piece came up from a citizen. I just forgot his name, Mike. He suggested that we add Sharrow's. And City Council did want staff to look at adding, this is essentially a test program. And we'll get them in as soon as the weather's warm and it stops raining, which I believe is this coming weekend. So in the next few weeks, you'll see those go in.
So many people don't even know what they are. How's the city plan to kind of educate people about what they mean?
The good news is it's a striped lane at the side of the road, which traditionally is either a breakdown lane or a bike lane. Usually when it's more narrow, it's a bike lane. But it actually is a picture of a cyclist on it. So it is, you know, one of the challenges in this town is that it's not just educating residents, it's educating visitors. So this is an international symbol. This is a symbol that's used in a lot of other communities. So it should be something that is apparent.
So as I understand it, it's actually they share the driving lane as opposed to a designated bike lane.
Right. That's the derivation of the word Cheryl.
Okay.
Although along Park Avenue, where it's really tight, they will be sharing that right-hand lane, but it will be over to the, it's my understanding, I believe it will be to the right-hand side.
So does it mean that cyclists then can now, since they have the whole road, can they ride two abreast?
That's discouraged.
Okay. This Blinsky, is that how I say it? Deployment, what is it and what is it for?
I think that's how you pronounce it, or Blinksy. This is a really interesting piece. The Park City Center that focuses on innovation, Pando Labs, they're out at Kimball Junction. Our staff has been working with them on economic development, as well as Jeff out of the county has been working with them as well. And this is a project that came out of there. These are essentially sensors that look at Bluetooth signals, and it isn't looking at your specific Bluetooth signal. It isn't able to get data about who you are, but it just says, wow, that's a person who has a device. So if you have Bluetooth on your Apple iPad or your phone, and you're driving past one of these, and we'll be installing 20 to 25 of these around the city, although mostly in the Old Town area, it basically gives us traffic information and helps us identify movement of people in addition to the traffic counters that we have.
Why do we care?
We very much care. If you'll remember, back in December, we had a day where we had some of the biggest traffic we've ever seen. It helps us to understand movement patterns and understand, and when we understand that better, we can both, number one, give people a heads up that, hey, we think today's going to be a really big day on loadout, so make sure you're paying attention to what time you're leaving, as well as it enables us to work with UDOT and the feds on what additional changes can we make.
I didn't see a price for this. What are we talking about spending?
I believe it's a demo. I don't believe we're spending.
Okay. And then the street department wants to purchase a machine that can clean out stormwater pipes and stormwater drains. Isn't this the Snyderville Basin water reclamation's job?
You know, I will tell you, when I came to the city, I actually didn't know we had a stormwater system. And we actually have 39 miles of piping that we maintain as the city. And so what that does is that means that that directs water to go different places. And in a town like ours where we have mine tailings, our stormwater system actually takes on even more importance than in a typical town where you might let water just go into the ground. So we maintain, in addition to that, we maintain 1,653 stormwater inlet boxes. And both at 39 miles of pipe and the 1,600 inlet boxes can get clogged. And so where we're maintaining those, we really need this has been something that's been on the capital project list as long as I've been at the city, and it's time now, where in December we were designated by the state as a MS4 community, which means that we are now under state regulation for stormwater, which we hadn't been in the past. I will say we've had a lot of best practices in place, but we will be having new regulation, and we will be having to add both staff as well as budget for that.
Yeah, so how often do you clean the drains and the pipe?
It's my understanding that this is something that's going to end up being used on a daily basis. I think staff said it would take them, with two full-time operators, it's going to take them 5 years just initially to clean the pipe, and then it will be an ongoing cleaning. And as well as when, you know, you'll see Snyderville Basin out with their truck anytime they have something clogged up.
Okay. Any idea what that price tag is?
I believe it is a very expensive machine. I think it's in the $2 to $250 range, but I am not exactly sure. It is a expensive piece of machinery, but it will pay off.
Let's see. Budget discussion begins at 4:00. The council at each of its meetings has kind of just taken a different step with the budget. This week, you'll be looking at operating expenses. The report says that you're looking at $336,000 increase in the general fund. That's down, though, from a $900,000 request. So how does the council decide what gets funded and what doesn't?
The council uses a process called budgeting for outcomes. So they've identified what their priorities are, and they've shared those with the community. That's available on the city's website and in the strategic plan. And so when I came to the city, I was very impressed that we use budgeting for outcomes, because it puts your dollars where your priorities are. And I had a professor one time in grad school who said, if you want to see what an organization's priorities are, look at their budget. And so we're aligning our strategic plan with our budgeting process. So what happens is that there's actually a staff committee that's put together every year, and they spend over 40 hours meeting and going through every single request and rating those requests based on council's priorities. So they give them a score, and then they make a recommended budget to me. I'll look at the budget. I actually only made one change between this capital improvement budget and the operating budget this year, and then that goes on to council for their consideration. Council, absolutely, at the end of the day, this is their budget, so they get to make changes to it.
Park City saw the largest sales month, I think, this past winter than it ever had. Some kind of record was set. What does that mean then for your revenues? You got that much more money to spend?
I believe this year we will probably set a record for sales tax. That being said, the city has a more conservative budgeting outlook in that no matter what, if we're up year over year, we still limit our, so we may be up 9 or 10% this year, year over year, and that's on top of, I think last year was a 7%, and since the recession, we've generally had double-digit increases in sales tax. That being said, we've limited ourselves to a 4% increase in budget year over year. And so this $336,000 fits in line with that 4%. And this doesn't, as you know, we've already discussed things like needing to pay bus drivers and building inspectors more money, increases in health care and increases in retirement.
All right. Budget gets adopted on June 18th. Any big hurdles between now and then?
I don't anticipate any, but as always, Council very much appreciates public input on this and feedback on it. We consider this an off-budget year, so the changes we're making are changes that respond to the economy or they're unanticipated changes. So it's not a big budget year for us, so I don't anticipate any issues.
All right. Also, in work session, you'll be looking at water elevation base surcharge. This is, again, just in work session. So this was brought up last year as a means to help recoup the costs that are associated with pumping water uphill to the highest places in town. How common are such surcharges like this? Pretty common?
They are. Staff, actually, one of the parts of this was to look around the state and to look around the nation, and these do exist in other places. The premise of this is that if it costs us more money to pump water uphill, should those people who live there pay for that? And so this is a policy question for council, and it's actually a choice. We could either do across-the-board rate increase, a slight rate increase for everyone, or we could put in the elevation-based surcharge this year. And those who live kind of close to Boot Hill or in the flat parts of the area won't see a rate increase.
Mm-hmm. So currently, those costs are distributed amongst all ratepayers. So, people living in the flatlands are paying to pump the water up to Silver Lake.
And not just the cost of that, you know, water is our biggest carbon footprint in the entire city. So one of the other pieces of philosophy is that one of the best ways to encourage conservation are pricing mechanisms. So if you're saying to people who live uphill, well, you need to pay more for your water because it costs more water, then it may help encourage conservation.
So have you identified those areas that rates could be going up?
There are 5 zones that are identified in the staff report, and actually people can go online and take a look at the map and see if they're one of the areas. One of the areas is Aspen Springs, another is the Aerie, Upper Deer Valley is a separate area. So there are 5 separate zones, and the rate increases are based on the elevation and the cost to pump there.
So will the surcharge make up what it cost to actually pump water to those areas?
It will. That was the goal of the study, yes.
So living in the flatlands, my bill should go down.
It actually won't go down. So what we've proposed to council is either a slight rate increase for everybody or increase the elevation surcharge. What you won't have this year, if council goes with the elevation surcharge and you live, say, in Park Meadows or Prospector, you won't have an increase in your bill this year.
Okay. I noticed in the report, figure 1 and figure 2 were redacted. Any reason why that was?
Those are simply security. So they were schematics of our water system, and that isn't something that we share with the public.
All right. And in the studio also, we have Jenny Dearson to tell us a little bit more about the Art Advisory Board, some proposed policy changes, Jenny, as to how this board votes on approvals for projects costing more than $25,000. The staff has to come to the council after up to a $10,000 charge, or?
Actually, it's a $15,000 or $25,000 charge, depending on what it is.
Okay, so this is allowing the limits to go a little bit higher for the Art Advisory Board then?
So part of this is that we would require a supermajority for purchases over $25,000, and for the board, that means that 6 of the board members would need to be present to make that vote. If that is not the case, normally there needs to be 4 members present on items under that amount. And so with these bigger purchases, we want to make sure the full board is making a recommendation to council.
And that does still go to council. That's
right.
A good point.
Right.
Okay. So how much are we talking about spending? I mean, how much is there in the coffers to spend on art?
Well, it depends on the projects. Currently, we have some 1% projects that we've been working on. For instance, the library project that's being installed as we speak. The artist is here that week. This week. installing that piece. That piece was about $60,000. We have a piece that was approved last year, and that is going in this summer. That's out at Quinn's Junction, and the price of that piece was $84,000. So it's pieces like that that we do want to make sure that the whole board is really making that decision. And then looking out into future projects, we also have funds coming up for future approval that haven't gone completely through yet that will be part, as I believe, of the budget process coming up in council.
So what are we going to see here at the new City Hall Plaza?
So that is exciting. So that's part of our strategic plan, which we will also be talking about on Thursday. And so coming up over the next year, and so that's for 2015 and 2016, we're looking at projects both right here behind the studio and then also at the Bear Bench walkway, and then also looking at projects perhaps in the China Bridge parking structure and then as well as in the Wasatch Brew Pub. One of the things that I think the board is concentrated on and trying to align with is council's priority for transportation and walkability. And so we believe that kind of back here in the back of Swede Alley, all of those projects, we want to make sure that the community can kind of come together and enjoy public art, because this is where people will be parking and this is where people will be walking and taking our city transportation. We want to make sure that we have some cultural vibrancy there.
Yeah, I'm surprised though with the bear bench. I mean, we've already got a bronze bear and we've got kind of the artwork arch. I mean, we're really going to put more?
There's always need for more. And I think, again, I think it's a spot that we're really looking at and considering what we do want to put there. Another big part of the strategic plan is really trying to balance the collection that we currently have with pieces that we're going to be acquiring in the future and making sure that they're balanced and that in some way that they connect together. We're not just looking at a specific site like the site back here behind the studio, but really how does this piece relate to a piece that's somewhere else within the city, and really adding to that vibrancy in the collection.
Okay. Real quick, Diane, I wanted to ask you in response to Carol Agle from the Park City Board of Realtors. I mean, she was on last week saying that instead of building new housing, maybe the city should look at buying some of the less expensive condominiums in Old Town while the price is right. She was saying, you know, I mean, at $415,000 as a average price, that there's some bargains to be had.
Carol brought that up at our Lower Park Ave community meeting last Tuesday at the Yarrow or DoubleTree by Hilton Hotel, and it was a great idea. We got a lot of terrific ideas at that session, and I believe that Carol's idea will be part of a market basket approach that the city has. You know, one of the pieces that Phyllis has proposed in that Phyllis and Rhoda are proposing in the housing plan is that we do go out and buy existing properties. You know, not everyone wants to live in a condo, so we don't want to go with a single. We want a market basket approach to this instead of just buy one thing.
Okay, need to leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's Diane Foster and Jenny Dearson with Park City Municipal. It's 8:48 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, and in the studio with me now from Park City Municipal, Stu Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's that time of day. It looks like we're going to have some lovely weather for it as well. Friday is bike to school or bike to work day.
Yes, it is.
You're organizing that then? Or?
Yes. So I'm actually working with Basin Recreation as well, and they're helping to organize all of the events out in the basin, and then I'm organizing all of the stuff in city limits.
Okay, so what's going to happen?
All right, so we'll start with Bike to Work Day. We have our traditional spot down at the Olympic Welcome Plaza down at Squatters. We'll have tent and breakfast and some giveaways and things like that. But we're also adding the Basin Fieldhouse is going to basically be kind of a hub for anybody that works out in the basin or lives out in the basin, that even if you work from home, you can kind of stop in and ride there just to try and get people out, make the presence a little bit more known.
I could be passing by there about 5:30 in the morning. Is how early are you going
to
be there?
Yeah, we'll be there from 7:30 to 9:30. But if you want to come on out at that point, it'd be great to see you. We'll also have, actually, White Pine Touring is putting a tent up at Quinn's Junction, which will be great. And they are providing a person and some breakfast and everything for folks that come in from Heber, Camas, that area. And it's not traditionally a park and ride, but we got permission to park some cars out there and everything. So people can either, if you work in Quinns, you can ride down the rail trail to get there, still get some breakfast and everything. Or if you drive in past Quinns, you can park there, grab some breakfast, cruise on into town, grab some more breakfast at Squatters. It'll be great. So.
Okay, I think the National Day actually was like last week. We just push it back due to weather? Or?
It was, yeah. So we celebrated a little bit later here just because it tends to rain in May. We could probably have had it in March and it would have been beautiful and sunny. But it turns out that May is one of our rainier months. And so we push it towards the end of May just to try and get some better weather. And it looks like it's going to be beautiful and sunny. So yeah.
So why is it important that we do something like this? I mean, to host this day? Put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is to really kind of highlight that there are a lot of people that do make an effort to commute either on bike, foot, or by public transit. And so it's just kind of a celebration of not just getting in the car and driving to work, because that is really easy and it does take kind of the mental shift to make that effort.
I was going to say, in addition to the breakfast giveaway, you have some other giveaways,
I think? We do. And actually, so both the Mark and the Basin Rec Fieldhouse, we're giving away a couple of month passes to those, which will be awesome. So if you live out in the basin and you want to try and qualify for a Basin Fieldhouse pass, you can stop in at the Fieldhouse. And then if you come to either the Quinns location or the Squatters location, you can qualify for a Mark pass.
Okay.
And it's a opportunity drawing. So.
All right. So you just get a ticket by showing up and you can drop it
in the
bucket.
Yeah, just write your name and number and we'll do it kind of like that. And then for Bike to School Day, we have, per usual, we have all of the elementary schools in the area on board. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We have some bells and various things like that to get on the bikes. We're going to try and do some education about safe riding practices, especially because summer's coming up. A lot of kids are going to be on their bikes and really trying to teach them both etiquette, but also how to ride, safely. And so especially at McPolin, we'll have kind of a police escort for kids coming in from the Mark, Aspen Villas, and also from Pocket Park off of Comstock and Sidewinder.
All right. Any idea how many kids even ride their bikes to school anymore?
At least on that day, we get about 300 between the basin and the city. So it's pretty exciting. There's a lot of kids out there. I mean, you see them all the time on the trails with all of the various summer camps as well that go on. So it's a great kickoff to the season.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. And actually, I wanted to kind of thank the Park City High School mountain bike team are going to come out. There's a few kids that will be helping do some bike safety demonstrations, as well as Summit County Health Department will be providing a few free helmets for kids that really need them. So,
great.
Yeah, that's
okay.
It.
Okay. Hey, Stu, thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
That's good news for the folks with the Park City Sailing Club. In the studio with me, I have Buster Pike and Ken Block to tell us about Sailpalooza. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us on the show.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so what do you want to start, Buster? What have we got going on?
Sure. This weekend we've got Sailapalooza. Summer will be here. Saturday, May 30th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Jordanelle, and it's free with entry to the park. And we'll have sailboat rides, barbecue. We'll get some of our dinghies out, 420s and lasers, and show the kids how our summer camps work and do a little bit of stuff on boating safety and a little bit more that Ken can tell us about.
Yeah, we'll also have some of our J-22s and our Rhodes 19 rigs so we can bring out families. Last year, about 300 people joined us. And considering, I'm going to say there's a pent-up demand for an outdoor activity, and the weatherman looks like he's going to fulfill our wishes this weekend. And all of that rain is actually as difficult as it's been for our outdoor activities. The Jordanelle is filling up like a bathtub on full speed, so we'll have plenty of water.
Okay, so what, Sailing Club been around, what, 5 years now? Is that?
This is, believe it or not, Lynn, this is year eight.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And just a little historical note, last year, 900 people sailed with us, which is an amazing number considering, the size of our community.
All right. So how many boats do you got of your own now?
Another remarkable number. The club now owns an almost debt-free 36 boats.
Wow.
So this is kind of a new model. This is what's called community sailing. You know, old days of sailing, you owned a yacht and you sailed, or you had a little boat that you car topped. Community sailing is about accessibility and affordability. And for, you know, our entry fees into Park City Sailing are modest, $65 an individual, $100 for a family. And then we have a menu of services. The family membership gives you a discount of 15% on our summer sailing camps. And it also gives you access to what we call our access boats. So you can use an online reservation system. And I know you're quite familiar because you sail a lot on Sundays.
I am not a sailor.
No, that's right. You're not. it's someone else. And it's $450 now to sign up. And you get access to the boat for the entire season using an online reservation system in 3-hour increments. So it's just quite an amazing and inexpensive way to get yourself and your family on the water. Plus, for people like you, we have our adult sailing program. We'll have lessons on Mondays and Wednesday nights, plus private lessons, or you bring your family, we'll turn it into a family lesson. I think Buster also wants to talk about, we've got some very exciting things with the junior sailing camp, which commences on June 15th.
We've got two great programs going this summer. One is called the Guppies program, and that's for kids 5 to 7. And so that's a great way to get kids comfortable on the water and just having fun on boats. It's super awesome. Then we have a science and sailing camp. So the science teacher from Ecker Hill, Don Crandall, is our science and sailing coach. And we've got 2 weeks where we're going to be building little mini submarines and getting kids messing around with science and then learning about sailing as well.
Okay, people can get all the information about the weekend Sailpalooza, the camps, the lessons online at sailpc.org.
Yes,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, Ken, Buster, thank you.
And thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.